Bonjour, hi, I'm Pascal Auclair. I hope this talk supports you in your practice. J'espère que cet enseignement vous sera aidant. If you'd like to support my teaching, you can use the donate button underneath my picture on Dharma Seed. Vous pouvez me soutenir en cliquant sur le bouton sous ma photo. Your support is greatly appreciated. Merci.
I was just thinking that I should have thought a little bit about what I'll say in the next hour. It's a long time. But thank you to associations of mind. I trust there will be some. Maybe a few more words. I'm thinking of revisiting a little bit these, what we call these three characteristics, three universal characteristics of phenomena. So I've touched on this at the beginning of the retreat, not talking about the information in phenomena. So maybe reviewing this a little bit. What is called also the three marks of existence, the three marks of existence. So what is meant by this is that every experience that we have, they have three things in common. Each experience has particularity, doesn't it? You know, walking outside on Saturday afternoon is different than walking outside on Saturday morning. You know, what we have for lunch every day is different. Even every bite is slightly different. There's different characteristics. Some things are blue, other things are red. Some things are far, other things are near. Some things are of the past, something of the present. They all have very specific characteristics. Makes it pretty juicy because it's never the same thing again. And when we come to meditation, we will come close to each event to recognize that it's different. Each thing is different. Each event is different. So we go under the concept. The concept makes it the same. Watermelon is watermelon. But this bite of watermelon is a unique event. And as we come close and we start to, with intimacy, to get interested in all this diversity of experience, the different moods, you know, the different sensations, what it is to be embodied, it's changing all the time. As we come very close, to the specific characteristics of each event, we're going to start to notice, that's the guard bringing the message to the queen, we're going to start to notice that all have a few things in common. So what they have in common, we've named now. It's impermanent. Huh? Whatever is there, I think we've seen this week that things are changing at every level. You know, at the level of physicality, changes from one moment to the next, before the meal, after the meal, during the meal. It changes at the level of moods. Would we say we had a few mood swings here this week? A few, I would think. And same thing with thoughts, many different thoughts, you know, so they've been impermanent in this way. And the feeling tone, so we isolated different parts of our experience to notice how dynamic and changing it is. Yeah, like this. And even today we were like, oh, consciousness, consciousness. Is it possible that it's also flickering like the rest? You know, that there's a sound consciousness and then, whoops, body consciousness. And then, and that it keeps flickering and changing. It's also, yeah, changing. The grumpy consciousness is different than the joyful, hopeful consciousness. And so that's one of the characteristics that, or marks of existence. By what is existence marked? By change. The other one is, I think I called it maybe the defective nature, that it can't bring satisfaction. The word in Pali for this is dukkha, dukkha. Often we'll use that word because it, there's so many translation, it touches on so many things. And I'll come back on this one. And the last one, just to name them, is that nothing can be owned because it's conditional, it's changing. And when I think something is mine, I might discover, it will be revealed at some point, probably, that it was not exactly mine. Memory, health, sense of humor, the other one, something else, my bike. You know, that it's not exactly mine, it's relatively mine, maybe. But the wisdom is to understand that, ah, oh, this too is not exactly mine, although I think it is, or I would like it to be. Even if I get it, it's not going to be exactly mine. So these are the three marks of existence. About this third one, I was thinking one of the classic teachings around this is the teaching to Bahia. And so at the time of the Buddha, there's in another part of the country, let's think India, although it was not called like it was, I don't, it was not exactly this, but there. Maybe 700 kilometers away from where the area where the Buddha was, there was a teacher there called Bahia. And Bahia was very loved, a very generous teacher. Without arrogance, I think he was just trying to assess things. His kind of assessment is that he was probably awake, that he was awake. You know, that he had freed the heart and mind because, you know, benevolence was a good ally, not so shaky, you know, and there was a lot of wisdom and, you know, he was probably not getting triggered too much. And he just thought, you know, I think it seemed like humbly, he thought like, well, I think I've done the job and I'm happy to share this with others. But somebody came and said, Bahia, I think you're not totally done. I think you're not... And the proof that he was pretty far along is that he didn't get insulted. Me? Are you talking about me? This person said, I think you're not totally done. And there is somebody apparently in the other part of the country, in the center, middle of the country, who is teaching and is known to be fully awake. So Bahia decided to find this person, thought probably that's the only person that can help me, so I'm going to go and search, and walked 700 kilometers or so looking. And you can imagine, you know, it's not like you Google Buddha and like press, you know, itinerary or whatever, and you know, just follow the like this. It probably was more than get somewhere thinking apparently he was there. And so, oh, no, he was here just a week ago. You know, apparently he's gone towards over there. And then he would go over there, and people would say, oh, yeah, he was here, he was here. But he's gone to, he left with this one. They started walking in that direction. You know, and so he didn't give up. And at some point, one end of the morning, he actually reached the Buddha. That's, we're happy for him, no? Because he really put the effort. Very eager, or there's another word I was thinking of, but genuine and determined, perfect. And so he gets to the Buddha. The thing is, it's like maybe it's like a quarter to 12, you know. And so he gets to the Buddha just before the sun is at the zenith. And he comes to the Buddha and said, you know, revered one, or I don't know what, probably finds the best version of what is the thing to say, you know. And, you know, I'd like to receive some teachings from you. Very, very open. Very. I'd love to hear something, get some teachings from you. I've heard you are very wise. And the Buddha said, oh, Bahia, thank you so much. I'd be happy to talk with you. But I have only one meal a day. And it's now. I have to go for my alms round before the sun hits the highest point of in the sky. So I'll go get my food. I'll eat. And after, I'll be really happy to talk with you. We can sit and have a chat, you know. And Bahia, very, very aware of the impermanent nature of things, the unreliable nature of things, the unstable, shaky nature of things, says to the Buddha, Your Holiness, or I don't know what, you know, like, we don't know what could be coming. Would you give me just a little something now, you know? And because we don't know. And the Buddha says, Bahia, really, when I come back from my meal, I'll really be happy to talk to you. And we will, you know, we'll go there. And Bahia probably like musters all the courage inside of him and goes for a third time. And maybe, as you know, in the stories of that time in that area, when you ask something three times, it's, you know, like you, if you can muster the guts to ask a third time, like he did, and he said, please, we really don't know what could happen, you know, like it's so precious. I traveled far and wide to, and here I am, if you could give me a little something. And I was going to say Joseph. And the Buddha says, okay, Bahia, okay, I'll give you a little something. It's known to be a pithy teaching. So Bahia, the Buddha says, Bahia, in seeing, let there be only seeing. In hearing, only hearing. In cognizing, only cognizing. If there is no you here, nor there, nor in between, this Bahia is the end of suffering. And then he left. There's no you here, and no you there, and no you in between. This, only this, is the end of suffering. And he left for his alms round, and the story says that a few minutes after, there was a wild bull that was running and walked over Bahia and killed him. And so people were like, oh, he traveled so far to reach you, and he was so earnest. And just when he finds you, he dies, he's killed. Like, that's so sad, so, so sad. And the Buddha said, actually, he heard me. He really heard me. He had done his job prior to, he was really, really close. You really completely heard me. We're good. He died, his mind free. And so that's a teaching on not-self, not-self. There's also Mogaraja, who asks the Buddha. That's always interesting, the questions the people ask the Buddha. Like often I'm like, wow, I would not have thought about this. So Mogaraja says to the Buddha, how can I avoid the gaze of the Lord of Death? How can I avoid the gaze of the Lord of Death? This is my question to you. You know, so one question for the Buddha. What is your question? Mogaraja's question is, how can I avoid the gaze of the Lord of Death? And the Buddha says, Mogaraja, be ever watchful. Instructions. Mogaraja, be ever watchful and don't take anything to be I or mine. In this way, you will avoid the gaze of the Lord of Death. And, you know, the Buddha talks about this, the freedom from old age, sickness and death. That's the promise of the practice, you know. Freedom from sickness, old age and death. And they're going to happen. It's a bit of a conundrum, no? Like, you'll be free from it, but, you know, the Buddha died. You know, or there was death and disease, even, and old age, the three. So, that's interesting. Free from old age, disease, and death. It seemed to require a change of perspective, because they're going to happen. There will be old age, disease, and death. How can we be free from them if they're going to happen? It means a change of perspective. That it's not happening to me. It might be happening, but maybe not to a me that I'm conceiving and sensing, maybe. So that's the research we're doing. Far out, no? That's very interesting research to do. So I want to come back a little bit on what here was the middle characteristic of dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. And so many translations on unsatisfactoriness, the incapacity for things, events, to satisfy us deeply. Why? Because changing, unstable, conditional, shaky, unreliable, uncertain. Yeah. And just to say that when the Buddha, when the Buddha came out of his retreat, so imagine you want to free the mind. You want to find something that is beyond death, beyond sickness, beyond. And you go on retreat for a number of years. So imagine one of us goes on retreat for, I don't know, 6 years. Like really sharpening the mind, you know, making it laser-like, you know. So not scattered, but really gathered. So that he can look at phenomena and not like comment and think about, oh yeah, but later, and yeah, oh yeah, I should stay with the breath, you know, but it takes some effort, no, to develop that capacity to stay, even with a few steps for us, you know, to really go and see what's the nature of this thing. And so after years of excellent practice, making unbelievable discoveries, so much so that we're here thousands of years later considering the discoveries that were made and the teachings that were given after. So imagine this person comes out of a retreat and discovered something that is unknown at that time. They discovered something incredible. And they come out of a retreat and the first teaching, it's really interesting to me to think, what is the first thing this person wants to say? They've discovered something, but there's no word for it. What are they going to say? What's the first thing they're going to say? And so the first thing the Buddha says is, it's not easy being a human being. It's not easy being a human being. I don't know why. There's so much compassion in this and honesty. You know. It's not easy being a human being. We're often separated from what we want. We're often stuck with what we don't want. So this is the truth of dukkha. That's the first thing he shares coming out of retreat. He's saying, it's not easy. Having a body is not easy. Having a heart or mind, or mind-heart, it's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy having a body. It's not reliable. It would get sick, it would get cold, it would get, you know. Even at some point, I think somebody asked him, what is the body? What is the body? The body is what is kind of, is liable to cold, warmth, mosquito bites, snake bites. This is what I'm talking about, juicy. What I'm talking about. It's not easy having a mind. It's not easy being sensitive to, you know, in the way of being touched by pleasure, like experiencing pleasure and displeasure. It's not easy because it keeps changing. Last year, about this at this time last year, I went to do a retreat outside in Elevation in Colorado with Mark Coleman. And we were, I think, close to just under, I think, 3,000 meters high. So just above the glacier, and at just where just when the trees are about to stop growing. And it was spring, so we were outside, and you know, sometimes we're sitting there to practice, like. Suddenly it becomes so hot. It's like so hot. I'm like, oh my God, my sunscreen. I should have brought a hat. Like I have one, but it stayed over there. It was cold this morning. I didn't think of and the cream. And oh my God, I'm burning. Like give it about 20 minutes. Suddenly the wind comes from the glacier. And I'm like, oh my God, I should have brought my down jacket. You know, like, and oh, I'm so happy I brought my beanie, and I'm going to put my little bandana around here. And I'm, oh my God, I'm freezing. And then suddenly, like, it starts to rain. I'm like, oh God. And now the rain, and then the rain, true, turns into hail. And when I came out of the retreat, my parents had written to me on Messenger and they had said, like, look, you're on TV. I hope you're okay. There's a hail. They're in Stoneham, like north of Quebec City. They're watching the regular news. And in the news, it's so intense that they're talking about that area of Colorado. Saying near Boulder, Colorado, there was a hail. And I was like, yeah, I was right in the field. And it was like, bang, bang, bang. And you know, at some point, there was a tent by a river. It was, small river, and so people are laying flat there. And you know, the tent is pretty thin, no? And suddenly moose come. Like, apparently you never tent, you never put your tent like 100 meter close to a, it's a bad idea. So you're laying down like this, and there's these mastodon, you know, these huge thing, and they're just walking. And what protects you is this. This is what protects you. And you're like this. You know? And when we got to the place, also I remember the manager of the place said, oh, here there are bobcats, mountain lions, you know, so here's what to do or not to do, or etc., you know. And anyway, when I came out of that week, for me, my conclusion was like, wow, if the Buddha was 6 years outside, of course, what he wants to share is that things are impermanent, you know. Like, this is not maybe our conclusion if we spend the whole week inside, you know, and receiving a meal every 3 hours or 4 hours, you know, we're like, well, things are pretty much the same, you know. It's been 70 Fahrenheit in here the whole time, you know. But if you're closer to life, to the elements, it's really clear, you know. And I was like, wow, it's impossible, like, all the sensations, for sure, what stands out is the impermanent nature of everything, you know. For sure, what stands out is that things are not satisfactory, you know, because, you know, it's cold, it's warm, it's... you have doubt, why am I outside, even? Like, I thought I love nature. That was a good idea, you know, etc. And then it seems like nothing is so personal. It's very clear. You know, it's not like hailing against me, you know, or the wind is not blowing this way about me, you know, like it's not, and the bobcat and lynx and moose, there, it's not personal, you know, they do what they do, and I'm somewhere there in the food chain. And, you know, it's not so personal. I'm just, we're just part of what's happening, you know, it's. Anyway, so the Buddha comes out of his retreat and says, you know, dukkha. Dukkha is true. It's true that things are shaky, uncertain. We never know what's going to happen with the body. We never know what's going to happen with the mind. We just don't know. Things are uncertain. And then also he says, which is, to say the least, euphemism here, interesting, it's very interesting, he says, but that's not the real problem. That's not the real problem. The real problem is the mind that wants something else. That's the real problem. That's really problematic. It's difficult being a human being, but the mind that wants things to stay the same or to get something that is not there, or that, the clinging mind, that is the real problem. There's a good news hidden in there, is that it's a kind of a mental activity, this clinging, this wanting things to be different. This is something that happens in the mind, so there's something to do about this. So these are known, as you probably know, as the noble truths. So the first one is dukkha. Things are uncertain, unstable, changing, inside, outside, in all kinds of ways. The second truth is that's not the real problem. The real problem is that we don't know it, we don't accept it, we want another version, we cling to another version where it would go my way, it would, you know. This is really something we can do something about, you know. That's something, and we cling so much that we even cling to things as mine, me, mine, when it's not a possibility, it's not how phenomena behaves, it's not ownable, yet we're still trying, you know. And look at the mess, trying to own land, trying to own people, trying to own, you know, We're desperately trying to own in all kinds of ways, and we keep failing and creating, wars and conflicts and fights. And so this is all turning around that activity of clinging. And then he said, and it's extra. It's possible not to cling. It doesn't come with clinging, you know, like there's a way that we can stop clinging. And how do we do this? Come to a retreat. Pay attention. We're going to start to see the mechanism of clinging and the possibility of release. And we're going to discover this for ourselves. It needs to be discovered inside for ourselves. And it includes clinging. It's not like we shouldn't cling. It's important on retreat to cling. I'm happy you cling, you clung. Because we need good cases, you know, good study classes, cases of clinging, you know. This is not what I want to feel. I want to feel something else. I want to be later. I want to be somebody else. I want to be back home. I want to be concentrated. Yes, cling a little bit more. Cling a few more minutes to feel, start to feel the ouch of clinging until, many of you describe this, until at some point something gives up. It says, oh, okay. You know, there's going to be this annoyance, or there's going to be this sensation, or everything is not going to be resolved. And then, oops, suddenly it's the same situation, but it's different. The way we relate to it is different. So these are the four noble truths of the Buddha coming, what the Buddha had to share when he came out of his exploration. It's not easy being a human being. It's not easy having six windows and doors, you know, constantly touched and impinged. Is that the word I've read? Impinged upon. The real problem is not that, is the opinion that it should be different, the wanting it to be different, the refusing that it's like this. This is a problem, the trying to keep something that cannot be kept, cannot be owned. It's possible not to cling. That's what we call freedom. And there's a path. There's a way to discover how clinging happens and how it can be released. And that path we've been walking here this week. It's a path made of three things. It's made of ethics. So it means non-harming. So the Buddha says, okay, so if you want to discover how not to cling, if you want to come closer to a life of peace and ease with yourself and the world, don't hurt. Don't take what is not offered. And you'll discover sources of joy that are beautiful, really beautiful. And so it's worth a lot, just that aspect of the path. Refrain from hurting beings. We could think beings will be, even, you know, how to protect, and the joy of protection. You know, giving protection, there's a teaching I always have to go back to see it and kind of forget the phrasing, but it's, to me, it's very powerful. It's offering protection, one gains in protection. Offering the absence of fear, or the release of fear, so being non-harming, non-violent, one offers fearlessness, fearlessness, and gain in that. You know, if we offer protection, we live a little bit more in the world where there's protection. So we gain it as we offer it. So that's a big third of the path. is not to harm with speech, not to harm with actions, not to harm with sexual energy. Imagine just that in the world, where everybody would be really careful not to harm. That would be a very different world. Yeah. And another part of the path, is meditation, is training the heart, training the mind, cultivating beautiful qualities, abandoning detrimental qualities. And that's what we've been exploring here this week, very, very much so. Bringing patience, freshness, starting over again, equanimity, courage, honesty, kindness, curiosity, very, very powerful qualities. And so we've very much been walking the path of ethics, not harming each other. Because, you know, often I think this, wow, like, but there's 30-some of us here, it's the perfect number for it to go really bad. You know? Add a little speech, add a little ill will, you know, add a few little things and it would get really ugly. You know? It's like back talking, or is it not talking in the back of, and you know, and this and that. Like, it could get really ugly, you know, we just invite a few cameras, vote people off the hall, create alliances. just for entertainment, just for the fun of it, as if there was a real pleasure in that. And so that's not what we've been doing. We've been actually trying to create the conditions for healing. I mean this in a spiritual way, healing, you know, so that we can heal the relationship to ourselves, we can find how to live, strengthen the beautiful values so that we can live by them, even more express them, manifest them. So we've been walking the path of ethics, we've been walking the path of meditation. And you might think, yeah, well, me, I didn't do so well on that level, you know. It's, you know what? It's not that important. It's not important that it's messy or, you know, bancal in French, like wobbly. It's not rickety. Practice is good. Like any movement towards understanding, towards is really powerful. And yeah, I used to think that my teacher were perfect practitioners until I sat retreat with them when they were students and they reported and I could hear what they, you know, and it was really liberating to see, oh yeah, they're also a little messy. You know, they're also scattered. Okay, they also want to achieve. Or, you know, there's all these things that I could see in me. I could see also in them. Maybe in a lesser way, etc. But still. And anyway, to me that was good news. First, it's disappointing. You know, like you're like, oh, my God, all these projections, you know. But then, eventually it's very liberating because you're like, okay, so I have to find the way inside of me also, and humans can do that, you know. And so whatever is your assessment of what happened here this week, or is happening, because there's still hours to come, of you know, of exploration, still, we were on the path. We really were on the path, and we did take a few steps, and they're important steps. And then the last part. So I'm dividing the path into three right now, saying there's an aspect of non-harming, non-violence, ethical path, they call part of the path. There's another that is meditation or mind cultivation, heart-mind cultivation. We did that. And there's a part that is understanding, view. So that's the how we view things. So we have to work on this if we want to remove the clinging that is what is painful for human beings. We have to change the view. We have to change how we're perceiving things. And so how we do this? By non-harming, it allows us to not be agitated on the cushion or the chair. Because if we've harmed, we're going to be agitated. We're going to be justifying. We're going to be nervous. We're going to be, you know. So we don't harm so that the mind can get quiet. And the mind getting quiet and observing things, coming close to things, will reveal the nature of things. And in this way, our view will change. Our understanding will change. And here we talked a lot about this wise view, that things are impermanent. That is known to be a wise view, a wise understanding, as opposed to I'm a fixed, permanent Pascal, and it will always be like this, and that's my body, and like to actually change that view a bit. No, it's changing all the time. It's very porous, the play of interaction, interdependence, cause and conditions. And so talking about the three characteristics is really talking about the view. And maybe I'll finish with this. You know, this morning, you might remember when I said there's a kind of a circle that is that keeps us a little bit stuck, where, I perceive and I think I will do this, I will do that, it's happening to me, etc. So I think like this, and when I think like this, I reinforce the view. And if the view is reinforced, then I will perceive it. I will perceive, this is my knee, and then, whoops, another turn, and another turn, and another turn. And this is true also, this delusion will, we could say, is also working around satisfaction, around dukkha, or the not seeing dukkha. And so we project on something or perceive. For us, we don't know that we're projecting, but we perceive that something's going to be satisfying. So we want it. And because we perceive it, we think of it in this way. This is satisfying. I need it. When will I get this? And we think about it like this. And the more we think about it this way, the more we view it as satisfying. And then we perceive it as such. It's really very superficial, but I remember one time a number of years ago I went to teach in Europe, and I probably was in a car with somebody, and the person told me this is an Audi. They showed me a car and they said, oh, this is an Audi. They're really I don't know what they said about this. Like it was a thing of a status, like if you have an Audi, and something about the Audi, and I noticed the circles, you know, and okay, like it's not like I'm not big on cars, so, but somehow, you know, I got some information, you know, and after I looked, it's a beautiful car, it's very. And then suddenly I was like, oh my God, like I'm looking for Audis. Like somebody told me it's desirable. I hadn't seen that, but they say, like, look, perceive it as desirable. And suddenly I was like looking for Audis. And I was like, oh yeah, that's how it works. Suddenly, like, just somebody put a little seed, you know, and me totally naive and ignorant, you know, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, yes. And then, and you know, it became funny very quickly, but I could have gotten myself into I'm unworthy because I don't have an Audi, and when I have an Audi, you know, which is not going to happen. So that's how you're just on the internet, and then you see something and project satisfaction or onto somebody, and so people come here on retreat and they project satisfaction on when I'll be in a relationship. you know, that's somebody on this side, and somebody on this side is like, when I get rid of that relationship, it projects satisfaction. You know? This one wants a relationship, this one wants to get rid of it. And we all have the things like where we project satisfaction, and the practice of changing the view is to come close to events and notice that they disappear, they change, their allure is different from closer, or that they're unreliable. Things are unreliable in this way. And in this way we can start to change the view. And it's not like we don't engage with stuff because everything is disappointing or dissatisfying. It's just kind of more, I don't know if it's honest, the word, but more, you know, I might start something and know that there's going to be difficulty in it. It's not just like, oh, when we do this project, it's going to be great. It's like, also, but it's not in its nature to, you know, solve all the problems and bring, like, it's not like this, you know. I hear that if you have had kids, you understand that. No, I've always wanted kids. This is completely satisfying. I hear, I don't know, that's not my experience, but I hear that it comes with a little stress. You know? As soon as you, carrying the child is like, are they going to be okay? Like, there's an understanding of the uncertain nature of things, you know, and that, you know, what's going to happen? Things are shaky like this. I've even heard a few people say, Pascal, not in the next life. I'll take a little pause in the next life. That's secret, you know. It's not promoted so much, but I've heard it a few times. Which makes me think that it's can be a profound, incredible, I will never know, but that also it comes with challenges. You know, it's not perfect. It's not. It's dukkha. How can you tell my child is dukkha? Ay, ay, ay. Okay, so let's take a moment to let these words dissolve. May our lives, what shows up, what emerges, what we are experiencing, what we'll be experiencing, may all this become the path for us. And may it lead to full liberation of the heart, so that the heart can be vibrant, joyful and compassionate, loving. experience freedom. Okay, thank you so much for considering these words. And I was not able to do a full hour. I failed. So the meal will be served in 11 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.